And we're talking here live from the Egyptian Theater as the opening press conference of the Sundance Film Festival is kicking off. Just seconds ago on the stage of the Egyptian, Robert Redford walked out, the founder and director of Sundance, along with Film Festival Director John Cooper and Institute Director Kerry Putnam. And moderating the discussion for the next hour or so will be Sean Means, film credit for the Salt Lake Tribune. So we'll go to the conversation.
Press conference for the 2015 Sundance Film Festival. I'm Sean Means. I'm the movie critic for the Salt Lake Tribune. We have with us, as usual, going from me here, John Cooper, the festival director, Kerry Putnam, the executive director of the Sundance Institute, and then at the other end, actor, director, Oscar winner, and the star of Captain America, the Winter Soldier, Robert Redford.
Yay!
Double that, too. We'll start with the conversation up here for a little while, and then we'll get more questions in from y'all out there as we go. Mr. Redford, I want to start with you here. You've talked a lot about, and I know you're very concerned about, the idea that change is in the air. First off, I want to know what you're seeing that makes you say that, and then also how is that affecting what is going on here at the festival and what's going on here with the Sundance Institute?
Change. I believe change is inevitable. And I think that we can see that there are some people that go with change. There are others that don't because they're afraid of change. And since I believe change is inevitable, I want us to be able to ride with it and to use it to advantage. So the idea that the festival, excuse me, the festival was meant to use change to underline the word diversity. And diversity is something I think moves the ball, and that's something I think we represent. And that comes out of change. I think as things change, I think the filmmakers here roll with it, and their films show how change is affecting the life we live and society that we're in. So that's how I feel. That's what I feel about change.
Okay. John, the films that you've seen as selecting the program here and the films that are represented here, how do they represent the idea of change either within filmmaking or just in the world?
I think, I don't think my job so much is about change. I think it's more about being responsive to what our artists are making. So that's what we do at the festival. So I'm seeing a lot of, I think besides a raise in quality of independent film and the artists that make them, I'm seeing a kind of an attention to the intensity of the works themselves. If you go from documentaries to the feature films, I don't just mean like dramatic intensity. I mean, if it's a comedy, it's funny, and if it's a drama, it has drama into it. And then we're seeing that actually the growth into our other programs of the virtual reality, which is so big here at New Frontier. We're seeing them pushing the boundaries just in actually the form itself. But I think what we're really seeing is just a lift in the quality. And like we sat down and thought about what is going to be the audience experience at this festival and how is that different. And I think the wild ride of this festival is going to be felt by the audiences.
It's one thing that is interesting this year, I think, is that there are a good many events that you have to be here for. Tonight, for example, you want to talk about what's going on tonight after the Nina Simone show?
Yes, John Legend is going to play some Nina Simone songs. So as you go into, this is a festival. We're supposed to be festive. This, of course, is a one-of-a-kind event right now, us together. also, we put a lot of emphasis in our what we call off-screen. So the power of story panels in particular are very exciting this year. We started early, and so we have amazing... Do you want to talk about Serious Ladies? Jump in.
I'd be happy to.
You're a serious lady.
I am a serious lady. No, our first power of story panel is It's on Saturday, right? Saturday afternoon. And it's a great collection of women storytellers. So we've got Jenji Cohen, Mindy Kaling, Kristen Wiig. Oh, no, I told you I would remember. And
Lena
Dunham.
And, of course, Lena Dunham, moderated by Emily Nussbaum. And it's going to be a great conversation. And I think what, you know, it's one of several events at the festival this year that will also be live streaming. So people will be able to see that wherever they are in the moment. So, yes, it's a great event here in the room, but also hopefully something we can share more broadly.
And the second one's kicking off. We're starting the last weekend is Art of Film, which is all the panels that we do are going to be dedicated to the craft of filmmaking. And that power story is going to be kicked off by sort of a wonderful moderator, Leonard Maltin, but also Mr. Robert Redford and George Lucas. I can call you Bob. Oh, finally, after all these years, we're there. It was going to be Bob and George.
Let me ask you about that. The panel you're doing next Thursday with George Lucas is one of the examples. You're out a lot this year. You've got the panel. You've got the Way of the Rain live performance happening on Monday and Tuesday. You've got the Walk in the Woods premiering tomorrow. Is it weird for you to be out in the middle of it all publicly this year?
It is weird. It's very weird.
Thanks for pointing that all out, Sean.
Oh, no.
The film tomorrow night, that was not my idea. That was John. Okay. And John and I have a relationship where I stay out of his business, and I support his business, but I stay out of his business. In other words, he's selection. He and Trevor are selection. And in the beginning, I felt I was very concerned about self-interest, so we made a deal that whatever was selected would be their business and I would stay out of it. So, and I've tried to keep that way. And I also said at that time, I said, just let's make sure that I don't ever think that anything I do should be in the festival. I think that would be self-interested and I don't want to do that. So we all agreed on it until recently. Then John went off, he went out of bounds, and so that was his choice. It wasn't mine.
But it is interesting. I mean, I'm looking forward to that movie amongst many of them. But you're in a position that most filmmakers who come to Sundance are in. You're trying to sell this movie, and because it does not have a distributor as yet. What advice would you have for other filmmakers who are that are in the boat you're in right now?
Well, I think, look, I mean, obviously, distribution is the end point. You know, that's what everybody dreams for and hopes for. And it's complicated, and I've had experiences that have been sad in that I've done some films that have not had either no distribution or poor distribution. So I can relate to anything young filmmakers might feel if they are having a struggle getting into distribution. So I think that since distribution is a big topic, it's going to be very interesting to see what this festival coughs up in terms of that. In other words, what about distribution? I think it should be a topic for discussion, and I think that the filmmakers should be able to have a voice in it because very often they're left behind. And it'd be really interesting to know what kind of mindset, what's the mentality behind the mind of a distributor? What moves them? What galvanizes them? I don't know. It's weird.
Now, Carrie, the Institute has gotten involved in that end of it somewhat with like the Artist Services Program. How is that sort of branching out?
I mean, the Artist Services Program, just a headline about it for those of you who don't know about it, it's one of many programs at the Institute that works year-round trying to support artists both creatively telling their stories and then sort of tactically and strategically connecting them with audiences. And this particular program is about really is about providing opportunities to filmmakers who want to be more entrepreneurial with how they release their films after a festival or, you know, at whatever point. And so we have a set of tools and partnerships that enable filmmakers to come through us as a not-for-profit and get their films widely distributed digitally while keeping the lion's share of their revenue and being able to be... we have a new partner this year we're very excited about. It's called Quiver Digital, and they've built a dashboard that's going to allow every filmmaker who uses these tools to see in real time how their film is doing, how it's being released, and it's a great transparency of data, and I think it's really going to empower people who choose to use that tool. Now, this is by no means meant to be a replacement for the wonderful traditional distributors that come to the festival and acquire films, but for many filmmakers, this is either a supplemental opportunity to the deals they get, or in some cases, an alternative, depending if they're, you know, if they want to explore self-distribution and be more entrepreneurial. So that's what the program.
Right. I mean, well, the distribution model has changed so much in the last, it's talking about change. A great example is what CNN has been doing with documentaries.
They've been doing a great job, I think.
I mean, you've got like Blackfish and Dinosaur 13 and Life itself.
Well, I think Netflix, CNN, HBO, Showtime, I mean, a lot of these subscription and in CNN's case, obviously not subscription, but a lot of these platforms and stations are really, I think, taking advantage of the great love of documentaries that's out there that's been traditionally, you know, somewhat underserved. HBO has been in that space for a long time, but I love seeing more players jump into that.
And they're branching into short films. Now, just we're hearing the buzz that they're coming to the festival. They're already asking Mike Plant, who's the head programmer, about the short films because they're looking content there as well.
I think, well, I might throw in something about documentaries and Sundance because it has a lot to do with my passion for documentaries, which go all the way back to the early days of Emile D'Antonio, Pennybaker Leacock, so forth. I felt that documentaries were important once upon a time. I felt they were really important because they carried with them a feeling of you are there, you are in the moment as it's happening. And I found that really exciting. And so I thought, well, at that time, documentaries were seen as something off or to the side. And I thought, you know, it could be that the day will come when documentaries, if they keep advancing, if they keep developing, will be on equal footing with major film. And so I think I probably committed to that journey, and I think Sundance, going all the way back to the point when globalization occurred around the early 90s, we always had a slot for documentaries because I felt that they were important. And then we kept pushing them, including the House of Docs, waiting for that moment when they would come, and I think it started with Hoop Dreams. That was a crossover documentary that went into the mainstream. And I felt that at the same time, you could see also what was happening with the development of internet and online, that there were so many voices out there. Suddenly there were all these voices, forget CNN. I mean, there was all the channels and then their voices, so many voices out there claiming the truth. Where do you find the truth anymore? You look at television, everything's so sound-bitten. You don't have time to digest anything, and you're moving from here to here to here to here. So I thought, well, wait a minute, where do we have a chance to slow down, take a hard look at something, and spend enough time to go into it to find out what we really feel about it? So that's why I think documentaries have become really important, because it's really kind of long-form journalism. We've kind of lost that in the last years, but documentaries give you the chance to dig into a topic and really understand how you feel about it. So that's why I think we've been pushing documentaries, and we have the documentary lab, and that's also part of the growth of Sundance, because when Sundance started, it just started, and I don't want to take up too much time here, but I'm thinking about the beginnings of this as I sit here in this theater and remembering the days when it all started, because, you know, nobody votes for new ideas. So when we had this idea of starting the festival, it was an outgrowth of our labs. And our labs were all about development, you know, having a chance for new voices in film to have a place to develop. Once it was clear that we were able to help them develop their skills to get their movies made, there was no place to go. So that led to the idea of maybe a festival, that just to create a community of filmmakers to come together and at least see each other's work. Because we didn't have that capability at Sundance, but Park City did. They had one theater. So we came here because they had something that we needed, and at that particular time, we had something we felt they needed. They needed something in that time slot between Christmas and the President's holidays to attract. So that's how it all started. And as it's grown, it's taken on its own dimension, and it's taken on its own momentum. And I'm just thinking, well, that we started it, but now it's driving its own force and energy, and it's grown and grown and grown. So I think John can talk about that.
Well, you just reminded me of one of the themes, really, that we saw in programming the festival was the concentration on documentary filmmakers to think about the cinematic experience. So when they really look at what's grown in documentaries is the use of story and the use of character, and how it's just not just the information needs to get out there. It's how you engage an audience, and that's what we really felt, and you will see at this year's festival.
And what's another thing striking, I think, about the documentaries this year are there so many really hot button issues and hard topics, and in an era, you know, when freedom of speech issues are such a major thing right now with the Charlie Hebdo assaults in Paris, as an example. It's sort of a central part of Sundance's mission, isn't it, to foster those voices and those and deal with those issues that other people aren't talking about.
Absolutely. It's all comes under the heading of diversity. I think we believe very much in diversity because that ties to the word independence, and independence is basically a label of our country. I mean, our country was established to be independent of larger powers overseas. So that's the framework for this country, independence. And so therefore, I like to keep that in mind when we think about Sundance, that we're keeping that word alive by saying, okay, we're going to have an independent film festival, which means we're going to have a festival that's going to focus a lot on diversity rather than getting locked in to a certain way of seeing things or doing things. We try to stay loose. That's why change for us is something positive. It's going to happen. So let's roll with it. But while we're rolling with it, let's not forget who we are, why we are, and what we're really representing. And sometimes that becomes a bit of a test.
Did you want to add?
No, I just, you know, to Bob's point about documentary, and also to answer your question about freedom of expression, you know, in our documentary program at Sundance, you know, we support filmmakers from all over the world, often in very tenuous situations, telling stories. And whether they've come through our labs or received a grant or just part of the general community, it's something that's very top of mind now. As you know, as artists and storytellers and journalists are at risk, this is something that you know we need to really stand for as a community and stand up together for them to do their work. So.
Okay, so we're going to start taking some questions from the audience. We've got Nicole and Gemma over here to run the microphones. So Nicole is finding somebody.
Can you hear me okay? Hi, hello?
Nope.
I'll just yell.
Okay.
Mr. Redford, you talked a little bit about distribution and it being a complex issue. This week, Amazon, Netflix, both made indications at various levels that they want to get more into the production acquisition of film. Well, how do you see that in terms of new players coming into a distribution situation that has been largely dominated by a handful of larger distribution companies? Talk a little bit about Amazon and Netflix.
I'm not that familiar with what Amazon is doing, except it all comes under the business of change. I think that whatever they're going to do, it remains to be seen how it's going to play out. So I don't think we don't get involved in that part of it. It's just we wait and see what happens. And it looks like Amazon probably is taking advantage of change. And so we'll see where it goes. But I can't really speak much to what I don't know about Amazon. They're just another player in the mix, and we'll see what happens. I'm only interested in the fact that stories get told, and then it'll be up to the audience to figure out how they feel about it.
I just want to dive in on that. I think I agree. We agree completely. It's not our primary focus, but I think when there are new new companies wanting to make and support independent films and get them out there, that can be nothing but a good thing. And there have always been a lot of independent distributors, both in the more recent era in the digital space, but also traditionally independent distributors out there working. It's great that Ted Hope, who's kind of a mainstay of the independent film community, is going to be going to run the Amazon independent film business. So we look forward to seeing what happens.
Okay. Got one over here. Gemma?
We've got a lot of people watching live around the world, and as we've done for a couple years, we ask them to submit questions for the group, and so we've chosen one here from Alex Kosowich. He asks, the line between TV and film is blurring. Have you ever thought of acting or directing in your own series?
Are you talking to me?
Not talking to me.
you talking to me? I started in television. I'm a big fan of television. That gave me my foundation. I started in the days of live television before that ended in New York. So for me, it was theater and live television. That was my beginnings. I was in a lot of television shows. I believe in television. And also, it's part of the fabric of storytelling in terms of film. So, you know, television is film. So the two of them together, I think they're blurring, and there's a reason why, aside from the money factor, I mean, look, mainstream film is shrinking, obviously. And so it's harder and harder for an artist to find their way in the major film business. So television offers more opportunities. I think you're seeing a lot of talent in television. If you look at the last several years, and some of the shows on television have been breakthrough shows, they've had a lot of talent. They have had talent in writing, they have talent in directing, and certainly actors. And it's a wonderful platform for actors to develop themselves. So I'm a big fan of television. And in fact, we have the Sundance Channel, so obviously that means a lot. I just think that we'll see what happens in the future, whether they come together and become something just one, or whether they stay separate. Right now, my impression is that television is advancing faster than major filmmaking.
And Carrie, we talked about the labs have extended that with getting into episodic storytelling.
Right. Yeah, this last year at Sundance, we extended our lab model to offer filmmakers, or anyone really, a chance to develop episodic projects. And we had an incredible outpouring of interest. This really came about because we were listening to our artist community. And like Bob said, listening to where they want to go, to where the opportunities are to tell really dimensional, interesting stories with great characters, and many of them were interested in understanding how to build skills for that form. So we felt the model of a Sundance Lab, which leads with story, was a really great extension into that form. And we had a great first lab. Michelle Satter, who founded it, is sitting right out there. I see her. She did a great job with that lab.
And there are some examples of that in the program.
Yeah, because we, you know, 2 years ago we did Top of the Lake here, right hand to the whole series. Transparent, we showed the first episode last year. That's sort of the story of how Amazon's developing that. And so this year there's two new pieces. Animals, Mark Duplass is bringing, which is independent television, basically. So he's actually using the words, crossing over, and an HBO show, Jinx, The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst, Andrew Jarecki, and he's going to show two episodes of that. So we're toying in. I mean, for me, interesting TV and independent film are running neck and neck, in both in the talent they use, they switch back and forth, but in the freshness, in the quality, in the things that we want to see as adults in this world, I think we're running neck and neck, and I think it's exciting.
All right. Nicole, you got the next person?
Peter Howell from the Toronto Star. Great to see you all back in the saddle for another Sundance. Question for Robert Redford. Mr. Redford, you talk about change a lot over the years. I've heard you mentioned so many times from the stage. I wonder, is change happening quickly enough for you, or do you ever feel frustrated? There's a lot of docs here that will deal with very serious social issues, and I'm just wondering, how do you feel? Do you feel that change is happening the way you want it to?
Well, I'm I think I'm an impatient person, so obviously that makes it tough, you know. Since change, I think, is inevitable and it's happening, sometimes I find myself a little bit ahead of and wishing it was happening faster, because I felt that I could see what the result would be, but I can't control that. So then what happens is that I have to go into meditation and slow myself down in terms of my expectations. The only good thing is that it's going to happen. And if I can just be patient and say, you know, don't worry about it. You may see something ahead and say, hey, let's get there now, because it's going to change things quickly and it's going to happen at the right time, because things are static. Things are too slow. I can't control that. So therefore, I just have to sit back and live with the idea that it's going to happen and it's going to happen in its own way and just be with it.
Okay. Gemma's got the next one.
Hi there. Thank you for your time. The big word of the week for us, I work at The Hollywood Reporter, is diversity. After the Oscar nominations, there's been the kind of conversations that should be happening all year, but of course only happen when we have this set of data to pull, you know, insight from. Why is there such a disconnect between all the amazing things you do here and the business in Hollywood? I mean, I see the movies here and I see the diversity of the content and the people making them. Why doesn't that translate to the business better?
God, hear, hear.
Who is the question for?
Anybody here.
Oh, anybody.
I'll take a bite at that and then jump in, guys. I mean, I think if any of us had the answer to that question, we would be publicizing that pretty widely. I don't have a clear answer to that question, but we have spent a lot of time thinking about it. And, you know, in particular as concerns gender representation as well as diversity of all types, it's something that we focus on a lot at the Institute year-round. And we've done some research of our own with USC, with Stacey Smith, which I'm sure you know about. I think what we've seen is that the pipeline, when you look at organizations like Sundance, and it's not just true of Sundance, it's true of many festivals and many support organizations, the pipeline of young talent interested in telling stories is there. But somewhere along the way, they fall out of the business equation of getting that work made. And so as money comes into the equation, diversity, whether it's gender or racial and ethnic diversity, seems to step out. And so really looking at that issue systemically and understanding what is it that collectively the field can do to begin to address that, whether it's, you know, we're working, for example, the guilds recently have all really set this issue as a big priority, which I think is a great step forward to see all three of them focusing so deeply on this. I think just the awareness of it, one thing our research indicated is that one of the biggest obstacles to changing this is that there wasn't an awareness among Hollywood decision makers that this was even a problem. So I actually think what's happened over the last 12 months has made a big progress in that and poised us to make some real change.
And to get really specific, I'll say it anyway, but Ava DuVernay won the Best Directing Award here for Middle of Nowhere. That's it.
I'll weigh in with how this came about. It has to do with history. I was very fortunate as an actor for hire to be in what was then the mainstream. That's all there was in the 60s and in the 70s. There was just the mainstream. But what the mainstream, which meant studio films, what they had then was they gave you the chance to do smaller films within their construct. And I was allowed to do some of the films that meant a lot to me. I wanted to do films that were telling stories about America in the gray zone, not the red, white, and blue zone, but the gray zone, the complicated area that was America that I grew up in. And I was allowed to make the films I wanted to make, and I had the subject of winning as a topic. I wanted to show that when I was a kid, I was told in sports, I was in sports, and I was told that it doesn't matter whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. And I found out that was a lie, and that everything mattered as to whether you won. So I wanted to make that a topic. So in the earlier years, when I was doing major studio films, I was lucky to have good roles to play, I was able to ask the studio, would I be able to make a smaller film about a more complicated subject? And they said, yes, if it's under $2 million or under $1.5 million. So that's how it started. And all through the 70s, I was blessed because I was doing larger films, and happily so, but also I was able to make these smaller films like Jeremiah Johnson or The Candidate. Or, and then things changed. I was very happy. And then in 1979 maybe, you could see there was change coming, and it was involving video on demand, it was involving cable, and they were coming on real fast. At the same time, Hollywood, as it once was beginning to shrink. It was beginning to become more centralized. It was because Hollywood has always followed the money, rightly so. The money was with youth, so the young market was driving Hollywood's direction. So Hollywood was no longer containing both. They were no longer making the bigger films and the smaller independent films. They were divesting themselves of that, and they were focusing on the larger films where the money was. And so I felt that Sundance would be sort of a gap filler, that if we focused on the independent films, the smaller films that were more diverse, that we would, in a way, keep something alive. It was not an insurgency against Hollywood. It was simply to keep something alive that I thought was shrinking to death. And it just coincided with cable and so forth and so on. So that's how Sundance really started, was to keep alive the idea of diversity and more independent-type filmmaking. That's sort of its history.
Nicole, you have someone?
Okay, I'll just yell. I'm Ashley Kewish with KSL TV. My question's for Mr. Redford. You talked about the beginning of the festival, the kind of humble beginnings 30 plus years ago. If you had known back then how big this would become, how much it would grow, would you still choose to hold it in Park City?
Next question.
I don't know. When it started, it was Park City had one theater, and we had this idea of, as I told you before, can it be a place where we can show films? We didn't have that over at Sundance, 40 miles from here. And so, therefore, it was an experiment, really, about can we create a place for new films to be seen with just one theater? And there were just a few films. There were maybe just a handful of documentaries, maybe 25 films or so. And then we would stand out in front of the Egyptian theater trying to get people to come in. So that's how it started. And because nobody votes for a new idea, it was a new idea. And so it was going to have to find its own way. It was not going to get a lot of support. And its own way turned out to be word of mouth that ended up creating a second part, which was audience. I suddenly realized, wait a minute, we're creating an opportunity for filmmakers to have a place to deliver their work, but also we're creating, I wasn't aware of this at the time, we're creating an opportunity for audiences who are to be able to come see much more diverse work they're not going to see in the mainstream, because that was shrinking. And I had not anticipated that, so it suddenly became a two-way street of opportunity, one for the filmmakers, and second, for audiences to come and see films they wouldn't get a chance to see in the marketplace. And I think that's how it began to grow. But I don't believe in expectations. I think that's dangerous. So I didn't think about what was going to happen. All I could think about at that time was, are we going to survive? Because we were only going on hope. That's all we had, was hope. And whatever would come would either happen or would die. I didn't know for 5 or 6 years what was going to happen. So when it started to happen, I wasn't prepared for it. I hadn't thought about it. It happened. It grew. It grew way beyond my imagination, and here it is.
I think so, too, though, that one mandate you always use when you create the labs, too, is getting people out of their comfort zone, out of the cities, to a place. And we are in nature, whether we look up or not. But so I think that's part of why this town's so wonderful. That's why I love it here, because we get to all leave and come together and form a community that's tighter. And maybe it's crowded, but it feels good.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I think the, you know, the idea that you're focusing exclusively for these few days on this event and you're not in the midst of a bigger city, yes, there obviously are challenges with crowds and traffic, and, you know, we think about this all the time, as does the city, who's been a great partner for us. But I think the excitement that comes from being really, really focused together as a community is awesome.
I mean, you have to look beyond the moment. Obviously, as you may know, we're expanding the festival this year to Salt Lake City. And for those of you who have been coming to the festival, you can see that it was beginning to get very tight because of the traffic and the ambush marketers and all that. It was creating a traffic jam, and it was beginning to turn in on itself. And yet we're having more filmmakers. We wanted to always increase the opportunity for filmmakers to have a place of their work to be seen. And Salt Lake City was becoming much more viable, and much more interested, much more sponsoring, and so forth. So it's happened at the right moment that this is the year that we are expanding to include Salt Lake, so that it's really Park City, Salt Lake as one. And we're able to offer more to the filmmakers, more theaters, more revenue, and so forth.
Gemma, we have another one here.
I'm Jeff Chamberlain from KLO 1430 AM. 30 years ago, Mr. Redford, speaking of change thematically, I sat right here at the Egyptian. You were on stage, center stage, as a result of a panelist at that time, I think, who didn't show up, and you were filling in. Times have changed, and as you stood there, you spoke of ordinary people and your experience directorial in the Academy Award, and you were on your way to film out of Africa. There was no question at that time for the 40 or 50 at most that were here that you had excitement and enthusiasm and a vision as Sundance was being born at that point. But today we live in different times. The world is a different place, and I'm curious, as you think back on your vision at that point in time, how things have changed, how that vision, purpose, and mission statement might have evolved. And if it hasn't evolved much, because certainly been on the vanguard of change, how has your strategy developed, and is it different today in delivering that mission than it was back then?
Well, times have changed, and I think as long as we stay true to our I don't know, mission, whatever word you want to use, as long as we stay true to what we're about and the way we want to do it, then we can float with change. I think it would be a mistake to lock ourselves into a way of doing things the way we did it then. As long as the core purpose remains the same, then we can stay loose, we can stay fluid and go with change. And I think that's what we've done. You know, we've made sure that we keep the main purpose intact. This is for filmmakers. This is a chance for new filmmakers to have a place to come, and they have a place to develop, they have a place to exhibit, a place to exchange, and we bring the audience into that as part of the process. So that's changed a lot from the first years, but the core purpose remains the same. Storytelling, diversity, giving a chance for other kinds of stories to be told in different ways. They may upset some people, but that's part of the American way, that we have independence and diversity is part of who we are. And so I think Sundance is really just substantiating diversity as part of the process. But we do keep, we're grassroots, we're not high end, we're downtown folks, and we need to stay that way.
I have time for like one more. Gemma, you got it there?
Hi, I'm Dominic Patton from Deadline Hollywood. You briefly mentioned earlier about the terrible events that happened in Paris earlier this month. And I wanted to know what your thoughts were on that and what your thoughts were on what many people saw as an attack against freedom of expression in a festival that prides itself so much on that.
Who is the question for?
I think it's open, Ball.
Is that a question open for all of us?
I'd love to hear what you say first.
First? What was the question?
So with the events of what happened in Paris, the shooting earlier this month, you know, many saw that as an attack upon freedom of expression. I wanted to know what you guys thought about what happened, and almost as if you
importantly, about do you see an attack happening on freedom of expression?
Well, clearly, I think there is an attack on freedom of expression in many different places. It's not exclusive to Paris. That was a sad event. It was a shocking event. But I also have a hunch it was a bit of a wake-up event. Where we are here is that we believe in diversity, and freedom of expression is very much fundamental to us, and that's evidenced in the film. You see a lot of films here that are going to upset other people, but that's okay. It's diversity. It's showing what there is out there. So I think freedom of expression seems to be in danger in a lot of areas, but as far as we're concerned, we will do everything in our power to keep it alive here.
I mean, no, I agree with that. I would just say we try to be a home, a creative home and a safe home and a community for people all over the world to tell the stories that they want to tell. And I think as an institute, that's very grounded in that founding vision, but it's something that we're mindful of every day, is trying to create that safe space for artists to tell their stories.
Yeah, because it's an active concept. Yeah. Freedom of expression is only real if you're doing it, and that's what we hope that we're doing here for these 10 days and onward.
And the idea of also to try to create a safe place for filmmakers, a safe place that what I think Sundance represents, and one of the reasons we brought it here, or Sundance, the place which is 40 miles from here. We brought it here in the mountains because, one, I could never have afforded to do it in an urban environment. But secondly, what would happen if you brought filmmakers into nature and see what the interaction would do to them in their process? They would be free. They would be free. They would feel like, oh, there's a safe place outside of where the action is, so to speak. And what would happen? Would that be a good thing? Would it collapse on itself or what? And I think that you guys can comment on, John can comment on that.
I don't need to comment anymore. Fine, we're here. We're in nature. We're going to do this thing. I'm so sitting to feel like I'm sitting on a power keg of these amazing films. It's been so hard, especially this year. You have nobody to talk about these films to except my staff. So we've been very active, chatty with each other. But I'm so excited to be here on this brink of what you'll see is just these amazing artists bringing their work here. And I think it's going to be a very exciting year. Right on.
All right. Well, let's light this candle then. Thank you all for coming. Thank you all for speaking.
Thank you.
Hydrate and hand sanitizer. Stay healthy. Have a good festival.
Thank you, Sean.